Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Two Nordics podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined as always by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
Sean is on the old light and sound. How are you, Sean?
Not too bad, how are you?
Happy New Year, chair.
Thank you.
RT is in the studio as well, doing a bit of recording with us. But the main man, Roy O'Donovan, is our guest today. How are you, Roy?
Great, thanks for having me, guys.
Great to have you here. You're here from Australia?
Yep.
But you're an Ari?
I am.
What part?
I'm from Tarndale in Dublin Hill.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I'm originally from. Mm. Grew up there, played army. School by football with Leeds growing up.
Leeds, yeah.
And Blarney Street for a year, so full North Sider. I have my badge to
love the accent too.
Yeah.
Leeds were one of the strongest teams in Cork back then, weren't they?
They were, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Won everything and so much, like you know yourself, there's so much talent, and that's what we're probably going to touch on today.
Yeah.
So much talented footballers came through the North Side. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that, like, you know, Cork City, Cove Ramblers, and just going across the water, there's not more talent that's gone on to do great things, you know.
But even in the Irish setup at the moment, there's a Savage Cork representation.
There is, it's great, there is, it's fantastic. And the game has changed a bit. I mean, it's a very athletic game now, and but I mean, a lot of the things we're going to talk about today about resilience and having a strength of character, that's kind of comes back to the basics of it, really, doesn't it, you know?
But you know, when you were playing with Leeds when you were a schoolboy, was it just raw talent you were born with? Like, I know there's a lot of hard work and dedication, but you know, in the early days, did you stand out amongst your peers?
No, I would say what kind of got me into it really was that I was out on the road and I hadn't a clue about soccer when I was about seven, and everyone else was kicking the ball around and I was trying to catch it, and you know, I had no clue.
Yeah.
And you're kind of half embarrassed. So I said, oh, I'm going to try this now and get my dad to teach me how to play. And he's a Man United fan, he used to watch Man United games, and I kind of got into watching it. And luckily enough, the attributes I did have, I was very quick.
Yeah.
So when we started playing ball, if the ball went past someone, I could beat him in a race to get there, and all the technical stuff comes later on.
Yeah.
But what I always loved was scoring goals, mm-hmm. winning games, and that kind of has got me through my whole career. That's the enjoyment for me, the team spirit, winning games, scoring goals, and that's the fun part of football for me.
Like. You're actually our first podcast of 2023.
There we go.
And you're actually home from Australia at the moment. Where you're living at the moment.
Yeah.
So if we just bring it back to maybe growing up playing with Leeds and how it progressed from there then to maybe into moving to England.
Yeah, well, I suppose I got this obsession with football. So I went from not caring about it and all my buddies on the street kind of playing ball to being never wanting to be without a football. I was out, the neighbours must have hated me. I was out at 7 in the morning on a Saturday, kicking the ball against the wall after school, dragging my dad out in the freezing cold to test out my new boots and trying to find nets somewhere I could lash the ball in. All that kind of stuff. But I think that's the right word, obsession. I just love football, loved everything about it, love watching players. You probably the same, Premier League sticker books.
Were you a Man United fan yourself?
Man United fan, yeah. I saw the likes of my idols at the time would have been Eric Cantona for pure flair, but obviously Roy Keane, Dennis Irwin.
Do you know when I was a smiley, my dad and my brother, they follow Leeds.
Yeah.
So when I was about 7 or 8 then, Leeds won the league, but didn't Cantona leave?
That's right.
You're born into who you follow, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So I left with Cantona to Man United, do you know what I mean?
No way.
Yeah, Man United.
Hardcore.
I think you're allowed to do it, you're about 7 or 8.
Yeah, you're all right.
You're pushing it after that. Yeah. But Cantona was the big influence on me as well, you know, it was the flair, the charisma, it was, you know, engrossing, wasn't it?
The personality, I think. And that's kind of what's lost a lot in the game now. I think he played with personality, he spoke with personality, he was different. I think that's what people like, you know, they like somebody's different, has something different to say.
Yeah.
He wore his collar up, like, you know, it's a little thing, but nobody wore the collar up, like, you know.
But the thing with him as well is, like, when United needed a big goal, way to Newcastle, or he always came up with the big goal.
Well, when he came back from his ban that time, he was
phenomenal.
Yeah, peak of his powers and FA Cup final goal against Liverpool, all that kind of stuff. Unbelievable.
How did you end up at Blarney Street?
So,
so that was controversial at the time.
It was. So obviously, I spent all my formative years at Leeds, and I loved it. And I was in the Cork County Cup team under 13s, where I met kind of Daniel Barnes really properly, who's the super agent that brought all this together today.
Yeah.
And he got a few of us from the Cork team to go up and play there for a year. So there was lads coming up from Ringmahon, Cove, and a couple of lads from Leeds came up, and we had a good time. We were successful as well at Blarney Street, but it was a controversial move at the time,
We used to have fierce battles with Blarney Street with no fan back in the day. Good old crowd holding your back.
That's it, up on the side of the pitch there. And if you were losing, there'd be a burnt car come on somewhere like
a horse.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the game'd be hard. Then you get your breather.
So when did the interest from England come?
When I was at Leeds, I went away on my first try when I was about 11.
Go away.
Yeah, I went to Wolves at 11, And
like for an 11-year-old,
I know it's mad, isn't it? Yeah, it's Donny Buckley, who was involved at Leeds at the time. His mother actually was one of the Mary. He was one of the coaches of the older team, and he took a bit of a shine to me, and he brought myself and Stephen Ireland over on trial. And he just gave us, he called it to the house, and he was kind of saying to my mum and dad, I know, he's very young, but it'd be good to give him a taste of what it's all about. There's nothing going to come of it. He can't go anywhere till he's, a teenager. But it'd be good to go and see it. I'll go with them. The only thing I will say, he said, is, like, don't be wearing any other team's gear, It's very disrespectful. If you're wearing Man United tracksuit or Liverpool jersey, right? No bother. Mum and dad got me in, proper, just plain Adidas tracksuit, and off I went. Turned up at the airport, and there's Stephen Ireland wearing his full Man United tracksuit, ready to go, Donny's probably like that, So I was over and back to Wolves then from, every kind of 6 months or so, I was probably gonna sign there because it was kind of used to go all right, but I broke my leg under 12s or 13s, and it kind of put me out for a few months, and then they wanted to kind of see me again, and it kind of wasn't a guarantee.
Do you know the leg break?
Yeah.
A lot of players lose their confidence and they lose a little bit of their battle when they break a leg, because it stops you from going in 100%. Do you think that may have, that early leg break may have kind of dented your confidence a little bit?
Maybe a little bit, but I suppose the beauty of it, I was so young that, you're kind of indestructible when you're kind of that age.
Still had the hunger.
Yeah, absolutely. The desire, the hunger. When I had the cast on and the crutches and all that, there's still that, I want to come back better and stronger. I had kind of a stubbornness about me. I think that's kind of what stood to me. I think that's a bit of a Cork thing as well, and they kind of, prove people wrong. A bit of that as well.
My nephew, he plays, he's striker for Rockmount at the moment.
Yeah.
But last year, they won all around them, the Munster Senior League, the FA Intermediate Cup, and another cup. But he broke his leg in the last. He missed all the finals and the trophies, So he snapped his shin in training. And when he came back, he was saying to me, he just wanted to get a goal as early as possible, just to kind of, you still have it. And his first game he started, he scored a hat-trick. But this is one of the best hat-tricks you'll see. But it was a bicycle kick. There was a rocket from 40 yards. But I saw you afterwards. But it's about, just when you get over the injury, just get that first goal. And say, we're at it again.
Important. The human mind as well, you kind of have to kind of trick it into thinking that you're back and you're flying, because there's always self-doubt in anything you do. You have these, feelings, emotions, natural.
Yeah.
But as you said, that first goal probably just lifted a weight off and then he scored a bicycle kick and all that after.
So Wolves didn't happen?
It didn't happen, no. So I was kind of back to square one then. So I went, as we talked about, Kennedy Cup with Cork.
The holders of it now, they won last year.
That's right, they win it quite regular now, it was kind of a Dublin rule back in the day. And we lost to Dublin in the final our year as well. But going to the Kennedy Cup then, I was coming back from a broken ankle, just about made it back in time, and I was still in the squad, and you're hoping to be spotted and some more trials and this dream can still be alive kind of thing. I played okay at the tournament, scored a few goals, we got to the final, But there wasn't a huge amount of kind of trials or interest came out of it for me. And, you know...
What age was that then?
That was under 13s. And I, cocky little kid, and I was little. I mean, like, I think growing up, my name was Roy Maradona, because I was small than anything else. Not because of the dazzling talent, but I was pretty good. I'm not sure I was that good. That was a bit of a shock to the system, because, you know, I was usually, you know, told, oh, you're the best and scoring all the goals and all, you know. So now all of a sudden it's kind of broke the leg and gone away with Cork, and it's not gone perfectly as such, you know. Yeah. So it's just a little challenge for me that I kind of had to overcome. And going back then to my club football, back to Leeds again, started going well, scoring goals, kind of found my rhythm again. And I had an opportunity to go on trial to Coventry when I was about 14 then. So that
was Gordon Strachan there at the time?
Gordon Strachan was the first team manager there at the time. They had great players.
They were Premier League?
They were Premier League club, yeah. So like Robbie Keane were there at that time.
Yeah, that's
right. Like the Hadji Cheapo, Gary McAllister. So
they were good team, didn't
they? They were in the Premier League for a long time at the time. So going there and seeing the quality that they had, and it was exciting for me, you know. Butterfly, seeing all the stars and watching a match of the day at the weekend, you know. It was brilliant. So I went there on one trial. There was a load of Irish lads there. Just felt great. It was a great week, great fun. Dublin lads, Kerry lads, a couple of lads from Limerick. And in the end, it went well. They wanted to sign me. And they ended up signing about, I think, 9 or 10 Irish lads for my youth team. Yeah. So it was great.
How does that work then? I know it's completely different at the moment because of
Brexit. The age thing, yeah.
So how did it work back then if you were 14?
Mm.
How does somebody... How does somebody sign for a team?
Yeah, I think initially you weren't allowed then go until you were 16.
Yeah.
And I actually went away when I was 15, kind of unofficially. They said, come for half a season, then we give you extra training and get yourself ready for it. So I left school after junior cert. At 15, left my mum and dad and family home to go. And obviously it was a dream desire. I was the one.
Yeah.
Wanting to go, obviously my mum and dad are probably thinking, Jesus, he's very young, and
mature for your age, do you think? Are we still?
I don't know. I think you find out your maturity as you go along. I think I got more mature because of that.
Yeah.
But like when I went away, and I was I can't wait to go. I'll probably make it within a month. You know, you're kind of dead confident, dead key. Then you go the first week, and this is how old I am now. I'm on the payphone and at the on the weekend after the game, and the game went great, the first game with the U team, whatever, and I'm on the phone just crying my eyes out to the family, like homesick.
Yeah.
And I was, in fairness, my dad said, look, you can come home if you want, it's your choice, he said, but what do you want more? Kind of put it on me then a bit, like, you know. And I was, I don't want to come home, I want to play football, da da da. So
that's just part of the process.
That was it. And he was like, look, stick it out for another week, see how you feel. And in the end, you get used to it. And the homesick doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It doesn't go away. Even now in Australia, it doesn't go away. But you get, coping strategies to deal with it and listen to a few podcasts like yourselves, bit of Irish music, whatever. Have mates that speak the same, have the same crack.
Yeah.
You know, you learn to kind of deal.
We've had in the studio before Patsy Frayne and Garrod Morrissey, and they found it difficult. The homesickness was, I'd say there's a lot of people go there and they come home. It's like another thing as well. So when you're playing soccer, like you spoke about, you know, playing on the street, playing for Leeds, it's for the joy of the game, because we love soccer and we want to, you know, we have these dreams. But then when you go to England, it's kind of more of a business, it's a bit more ruthless. Is it difficult to make that transition?
It is a big culture change, and it's like you're a number, you know, you're a human being, your individuality is completely.
And is it a case of like in Cork, you're Roy Maradona you're the best, and then you go over there and it's like the best of the best are in the squad.
Exactly. There's millions more can do what you can do.
Yeah.
So just perform.
Yeah.
And that's it. And that's difficult for a 15-year-old kid to get used to. And there's kind of this kind of culture of they almost want to, they break you down. They break down all this kind of bravado, confidence, whatever you want to call it.
The ego.
They break that down to try and build you up, but I never got that. I never got why you need to take the spark out of someone, you know? Because you kind of touched on it there. people come back, they come back a bit broken.
Mm.
I've seen a lot of talented yeah. players. Mm. We spoke about a couple. They come back. They still have all the talent, but they can't get themselves going. Again, they're a bit broken emotionally, physically, probably fatigued from what went on in England that it didn't happen there.
Yeah.
And they can't make a work in League of Ireland. You know, and League of Ireland is tough. It is tough. And you, but you really, it's a more of a mindset than a talent thing, because you've had the talent to get away in the first place.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it does. It kind of leaves people kind of.
And you know what? A lot of that depends on your upbringing.
Mm.
Who's after bringing you up? What way you're after being brought up?
Yes.
What kind of beliefs you have about yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Have you stable home come from? Have
you very important.
Have you got the resources to buy you the boots that you need? Have you got the car to bring you to the training?
Yeah. You got someone to lean on?
We all know fellas that could have went across the water because they were absolutely gifted at soccer.
Yes.
But because of the upbringing they had and getting involved in stuff at a young age, they stopped at the age of 14, 15 and got involved in drugs and drink.
Yeah.
You know?
There's one fellow from Blarney Street, who I won't name, but really stands out. He was like, and at Blarney Street with a good team, he was the best player.
Mm-hmm.
And he could have been what he wanted to.
Yeah.
But a lot of difficulties.
He had a very tough, I know you're on about, he had a very tough background, but the nicest bloke in the world, super talented.
Amazing.
Both feet, quick, everything.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it wasn't God's plan. Unfortunately, he didn't have to maybe someone to lean on that could help him along the way.
But there's a lot of people like that in there. That from the north side, there's a huge amount of talent, but for there's loads of other obstacles in the way, and it doesn't work out. But you had a stable home you were coming from. You know, you had your father. You spoke about your father. You know, was encouraging you.
Mm-hmm.
He was giving you that moral support on the phone. That's really helpful for you. How did it go for you now in Coventry?
Yeah, look, it went well in regard to youth team for a couple of years. I learned a lot. I got physically stronger. I suppose it was tough to get used to the cutthroat
environment.
Yeah, you know, I just...
Like, I remember be from other players as well then?
Oh, yeah, because you're all competing for a shirt. You're all competing to move up the ranks. You're all getting the reserves, getting the first team.
Yeah.
We all want to make it. But there's a conveyor belt here of people coming through, age groups every 6 months coming through, you know. So it is competitive, and it's very hard for young kids to put that aside and not kind of be, you know, it's hard to be friendly, you know, and competitive at the same time when you're not used to it. It's, you know, it gets easier as you become an adult, you become a first team player. You're all in the first team. You're all fighting for, you know, you're fighting for a shirt. But as a young boy, it's hard to get used to. And the managers at that time, I think, weren't very kind of emotionally aware either. They were more, you know, tough love.
Yeah.
You know, you make a mistake.
They were old school too.
Old school. You make a mistake, they would be down you like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
You didn't know the drill, down you like a ton of bricks. You didn't do something right. You know, and I think a lot of people go in their first year.
Like their children.
Yeah.
They're like.
You know, and they're used to being told... All there, and I know you have to get at times tough love, but everyone needs to be treated a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And I think when the shock of being told you're the best all your life, then all of a sudden you're in this environment of U team football, and someone is lambasting you, and you're not used to it. I've seen a lot of people; they just go. That's them. You can tell they won't last very long. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, as I said, it's there's more than talent to make a career in football. A lot more. You need luck, definitely.
And a good head.
You need a good head. You need support. Yeah. But again, even with a good head, there's times that's tested as well.
You said something earlier on there. You said the players that do stand out are unique in their own way. And one that was very unique, and we all know him very well, is Roy Keane.
Mm-hmm.
His heart, the way he played football, he just got stuck into everything. And I don't know, is it just the Irish people or is it everyone in general? But...
Just nowadays.
We just love a player that gives absolutely everything.
Yes. It's the minimum requirement.
He doesn't have to be scoring goals.
Yeah.
He just has. You just have to look at him giving everything he has for the team. And that might be even fucking his own players older when they're making.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mistakes.
Yeah.
Do you know? I think we call it tough love there. Yeah. Sometimes it has to be. Yeah. But like if you're a player like that and you're ruthless and like management can spot that you're a player like that. He wasn't very technical, right? And he says that himself, but he was all about the team and about winning. You know, did you see any player that may have been similar to Roy Keane playing a commentary at that time?
Well, I see a lot of players, because he was at his pomp at that time as well.
Yeah.
And he was a bit of a cultural icon here, sports-wise. You talk to any rugby player, Gaelic player, they'll mention Roy Keane of that mindset, you know?
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of people try to mimic what he did, but he was one-off. As you said, he played a personality, he gave his opinions, he left everything out there on the pitch. But what I would say about Roy Keane as well, very disciplined player because, you know, technically, physically, he was so good. I mean, to play for Man United when they were top team and be the top dog as well, you know. But he played like in front of the back four as a midfield player and he just kept things ticking over. He stopped the opposition from playing. He fed the ball to Giggs, Beckham, Scholes, whatever it was. But he could play these big diagonal passes.
Yeah.
He can make the runs. Get he can score goal the goals. As well.
He can, He's got some great
But he was
goals.
So disciplined just to play that role. And he played that role very. He just knew what he was good at. He knew what the team needed. And he was a great leader. That's just me.
Do you know what he had that I think that you couldn't teach? He had an engine in him. He had a stamina. He'd run up and down that pitch for 90 minutes. And, you know, he just had... I think, like, talent and all that, but if you don't have, I don't know, he had an engine in him. He seemed like he was never tired. He was super fit, you know, and he get you going. I think his persona in the media today kind of takes from the player that he was. He wasn't just a hatchet man.
No.
Do you know what I mean? There was much more to him than that.
He could do it all, and he just done what the team needed. If they needed a goal, he was there.
Played under him.
Yeah.
We'll get to that, what happened after Coventry.
So after Coventry then, so, look, I told you, we signed, 9 or 10 Irish lads all signed together. We all got released together as well. So at the time, Coventry had been relegated to the Championship and they needed to free up some funds. We all had about a year and a half left in our contracts and they came in and they called us one by one, no warning, and said, there's a settlement here, take it and go on the way home.
What age were you?
Probably 18.
Was it a bit humbling coming back?
17, 18. I stuck around for a while. I remember walking to the office and they're probably looking at me like I had 10 heads. And they're giving me the worst news in the world. But I kind of, just the way I am, I wouldn't show weakness. So I kind of just smiled, oh, thanks very much. Shook with Gary McAllister and the U-team coach's hand. Thanks very much. I'll see you again. Kind of thing. And they're kind of probably looking at me like, you know, like he's a prick now. You know what I mean? I said there was a lot of fellas sitting there thinking, crying.
Probably, yeah.
As much as it did hurt me. I remember it was a weird thing. I went back downstairs, I went into the gym, kind of done a few weights, whatever, kind of got rid of that kind of anger. And I spoke to my parents that night and I was upset and I was like, I can't believe it, you know. Yeah. Oh, my talent, this and that, doesn't mean anything. And my dad kind of said, and my mom, if you want it, you'll make it happen, but you just have to prove them wrong. And I think that was a trigger in my career that has made it last this long. And 20 years from that point, no. And it was a case of proving people wrong was what I wanted to do. And the best, it was ended up being the best thing that ever happened to me, really, because I had to toughen up. Naturally, I had to toughen up. I had to say, I have to go out in the world now here and make this happen. And I went on a few trials. I went to Colchester, Cheltenham, down the leagues. And they kind of liked me, but they had plenty of other options. And I didn't have time to wait around. And I got a phone call out of the blue from Pat Dolan. I had a good Christmas back in Ireland. And I got a phone call early January, about this time, 2005. Would I come out and do a training session with Cork City? And I said, I'd love to. Love to. So I went out and trained, and as I said, I had a good Christmas, so Pat Dolan trained him hard, and I probably, fitness-wise, I wasn't up to task after all the chocolate Kimberleys over Christmas. And
he'd one or two himself.
That's
big
it,
man,
yeah. That's it, yeah. But no, the training went well, and Pat wanted me to sign, but Pat was going through his own thing at the time, and ultimately he got the sack. So I'm thinking, oh my God.
Game over.
Yeah, this was my stepping stone, my chance back in, and he's got the sack here now. So Damien Richardson got the job, but a week before the season started, he asked Jerry Harris, who was Mr. Cork City, he was chairman, kit man, everything. He asked him, and he asked Liam Murphy, who was a great player for Cork City back in the day, former assistant manager as well, and manager, and he asked them one thing about me. Is he quick? And they said, yeah, he's quick. I'm going to give him a year. And that was the stepping stone, the trampoline for my career. Because Cork City gave me everything. Cork City was an absolute joy.
What's it like coming out to Cork City, full house, shed kicking?
Unbelievable.
It's like you're playing for your home city as well as the pride.
Special. Honestly, it was some of the best days in my life. The people I got to play with, playing at Turner's Cross, in front of my own people. We won the league. We had big European nights. Like,
was this
unbelievable.
The John Flynn and George O'Callaghan?
Yes, exactly.
Joe Gamble was a special squad.
Yeah,
wasn't
it? Unbelievable. Great team, just strong everywhere, full of characters, full of personality. Fun. It was fun. Damien Richardson was brilliant. Damien Richardson was somebody that let you be yourself. You know, he can knock you down as well, but he's happy to build you back up. You know what I mean? I'd often got lambasted by Damien on a Friday night after a game. You know, you're arrogant, you're lazy, you're this, you're that. And then on a
Saturday, there's someone 20-year-old.
And then I kind of, you know, and lads are kind of, I'm kind of ready to pull back, and lads are kind of, the old lads, shut up. And then on the Saturday, then kind of grandfatherly figure in him, because he was an experienced, and I always find experienced managers, he was able to kind of say, hey, what I was saying to you last night was, I need this, this, and this from you. Moving forward, you're too good to be doing whatever it was, not tracking my runner or whatever. And but I love Damien, brilliant. And because I had that relationship with him, I wanted to go through brick walls for him. And I think we all felt like that. Yeah. And we did. We won a league. We had great European nights. And as I said, some of these lads still friends now, 20 years on. Just a really close bonded unit, like, you know.
Yeah, it was good when Damien Richardson came to Cork, because he did have a ton of experience at that stage, you know.
He did, yeah.
And it was just a special time for the Cork City FC at the time, you know.
It was great.
It's a young club, like, it's only around since the mid-80s, and, you know, that was one of the standout eras. How did it end for you in Cork City then?
So I started out with Cork. I was playing on the right wing. A lot of good strikers. You had John O'Flynn. George used to play up there sometimes. We had Neil Fenn, Kevin Doyle, Shane Long, Dennis Bain, loads. So
they all came through as well.
We were all the same team. We were all there. So I ended up playing the right wing. There was a spot there. And Damien wanted someone with pace. He wanted Liam Kearney on the left. Me on the right. Keep running. Be a nuisance. Service the lads. Service the strikers.
Yeah. That was some strike force, though, wasn't it?
Great strike force, yeah. So I just had to get past my man, put it in there. Someone's going to put their toe in it. There was loads of goals in that team, yeah. But they all went over the next kind of 18 months. John O'Flynn was still there. Kevin Doyle went, obviously. Shane Long went. And then John O'Flynn was going through a few injury things, and I got a chance kind of to go up front. Damien threw me up front. I scored a hat-trick, and then I stayed as the striker then for the next year and a half, and I was banging in goals. I was up for player of the year in the competition.
Yeah.
In my second year there, my last year, I had 21 goals by the middle of the season. Jeez. And then I had all these offers to go back to England. And so that was 2007.
You were 20. You were all 20 this year.
I was 21, probably. 21. Yeah. At this point now.
Bigger, stronger. Yeah. Faster.
And I played 100. Yeah, and 100 games under my belt at Cork City as well. I felt like a first team player. I felt good. I felt like I know myself, and you know, I can have my own opinion when I go back there. I can play my own game. You know. And I have to Cork City and the lads, Damien, I have them to thank for that, because that was a great grounding for me. That taught me how to be a first team player.
Which just shows as well, you know, like yourself there now, Kevin Doyle, Shane Long, later then Shiny Maguire. Back in the day, it was like you went over to 16, and if it didn't work for you then, that was it.
Well, that's it.
But these lads went over, when they went to England, come back over there in their early 20s, you know, with the League of Ireland experience, you know. So if it doesn't work out for you when you're 16, it's not the end of the world.
No.
You stick at it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not the end of the world. And I think that would be my point. I think it's a good thing that this rule change has come in. I know there's a few going away now to Italy and Spain and what have you.
Yeah.
But I feel like there's a lot to be said for growing up first, learning your trade in the League of Ireland Academy, and all well and good at 18, 19, after getting a few first team games under your belt, go is kind of almost a man.
Yeah.
You know, the Premiership teams and the Championship teams are actually becoming more aware of, let's leave these players with their local teams first, build them up, and wait till they get 18, 19, 20, and they're big, strong men.
Yeah.
We look at them then, so we don't have to do the donkey work in bringing them up.
Well, exactly, yeah.
You know, and I think that's, they're after getting wide to that in the last few years, and that's what they're doing a lot of at the moment, isn't it?
There is, and the academy systems have got better here. They have put a bit of money into that all around the league.
Yeah.
You've got your 13s, 15s, 17s, 19s, whatever. Yeah. So. There is a bit of a pathway now, which there wasn't before.
Yeah.
So there is the reality of, you can do your leaving cert, but you can still be doing your training at night. If you're dedicated, you can balance the two.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to, really, dedication. And as I said, I learned on the job. I was the first person in my family to go and play professional football. I was headstrong. I wanted to go. My family said, hey, if you want to go, it's up to you. We can't really stand in this way.
Yeah.
But I suppose 15 is too young. And
it is, it is.
You know, it's way too young. I'm thinking now, my son is 7. Yeah. You know, but I'm thinking, geez, a few years down the line, I'm thinking of letting him off the leash and go away and do his own thing.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
You know.
So what happened then? Roy? You got a few offers.
Yeah.
Who were the offers from?
So I was signing for Fulham, who were in the Premier League at the time. I had plenty of things going on, but the main ones was Fulham.
Coleman, I'd say, was it?
No, it was Laurie Sanchez.
Or Laurie Sanchez.
And, so I was due to sign. I was going over there on the Saturday morning to sign, and the thing was, they were going to loan me back to Cork City for rest of the season, and then to start fresh the next year. And I was agreeable to it, like, you know, I was grand. And then I come on the 12th hour, Roy Keane, kind of called me up, said, "Will you come down and meet me in Jory's? Where they did a pre-season tour going on, and will you come down and meet me in Jory's at 10 o'clock tonight or whatever it was."
Yeah.
And that was it then. As soon as he made the call,
were you nervous meeting him?
I was nervous, because obviously he was, you know, an idol of mine growing up.
Yeah.
Himself, Dennis Orr, as I said, you know, fellas from Cork, being there, doing it, you know, doing us all proud. To meet him, and you know, it was great. He was, you know, we sat down like this, we had a conversation. What do you want? What do you want to do? Where do you see your career going? How's your season been? Just very casual. And he kind of said, "Listen, we'd like to have you at Sunderland. I'm filling the club with people that I know and trust. There's a lot of Irish there. There's a lot of ex-Man United people there. There's a lot of staff that I know from previous that I brought along. And, you know, I want you to come and be a part of that."
Hello, everybody. Just to remind you all, we are in the Opera House on 8 p.m. Saturday, the 25th of March, with Jimmy Barry Murphy and Shane Casey.
Yeah, two very, very important figures in Cork City.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Barry Murphy, one of the most inspirational sports stars we had in this city, and Shane Casey.
Yeah.
One Billy of Murphy the characters himself. Of the city.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The real offender will meet the young offender, as it were. But if you're interested in getting tickets, you can just go into the description of this video. And there's not that many left either, and we sold out last year. So don't be disappointed when we see you there. Yes. Saturday, 25th of March.
Thank you.
Were they a Championship at the time?
They were in the Premiership then, so this was their first year in the
Premiership. There's a lot of attention on the club as well. Yes.
And obviously, as you spoke about, there's a lot of attention on him anyway. Former Man United captain.
Niall Quinn was the chairman. Niall Quinn,
yeah, so the Irish thing was huge. So I decided to sign there. And I'm glad I did. As you said, the Irish connection was good as well. It was good crack there, yeah. Good bunch of boys. But I don't think anything could prepare you for the Premier League and the spotlight that comes with that.
What was it like?
Different. Special. Special. Brilliant. Like, I mean, to be part of it, to be walking out there. And I mean, Sunderland.
How many fans? 60,000?
Yeah, Sunderland get about 50,000 yeah. every week. No matter what division they're in, they're just yeah. a religion up there.
Cork City was probably 5 to 6.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Nice. Winning trophies, we might get 10 or we might get 20 at a cup final, you know? That was a big day out. But every week was 40-odd there. Religion, football was religion. And you've probably seen the documentaries as well.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of scrutiny on your performances and stuff like that.
And there would be, yeah. There would be. And this was kind of pre-social media. This was more kind of fanzines, fans forum kind of thing. But yeah, I kind of went there, and in fairness, Roy threw me in early on. It was a shock to the system. My debut against Birmingham in the Premiership, I came on. I was coming on the right wing. The right winger pulled his hamstring as I came on. I ended up playing right back. Never played there in my life. So my first couple of games I played kind of as a right back. Listen, I would have played on goal for the opportunity to play. Yeah.
Was Keith Fahey playing for Birmingham at the time?
Keith Fahey wasn't. He came the following year. I played against him a couple of years later when he went to Birmingham. Yeah, but good player as well, Keith, good lad as well. Yeah. I played him at a few different age groups with Ireland. Good lad.
Yeah. So what happened after Sunderland?
So after Sunderland, I suppose. While Roy was there, and Roy was kind of, you know, once I gave him 100% and he could see I was improving. He gave me game time. Ultimately, there was a chance then in my second year to go on loan. He said, look, I'd like to see you play more regular. He said, I might only give you a handful of appearances here before Christmas. You've got Nottingham Forest or you've got Dundee United that real keen to get you there. He said, Dundee United have been calling like since the end of last season. They want you up there. You'd probably play as a striker every game. And he said, be good for you to get 20, 30 games, score plenty of goals, come back here. Yeah. Ready to be competing for your, you know, spot in the team. So I kind of took the advice. I think I rushed the decision. I kind of had worked so hard in the off season. This was after a pretty good first season.
Yeah.
I'd worked so hard in the off season, you know, to this is my year here. Second year of my contract at Sunderland, I'm going to really force the issue. A kind of week out from the season to be going on loan probably kind of hit me a little bit. Unbeknownst to me, but I decided anyway. Look,
I'll go. Your confidence a little bit.
I probably didn't realise that, but I said, look, I'll go to Dundee United. Shook hands with Roy, told the club, got organised, went up there, and I swear, as soon as I drove over the border, I just said to myself, "What have I done? What have I done?" And I struggled so much for the only time I would say in my career. Mentally, just I could not get myself going. Didn't want to be there. Didn't feel like a good professional. Get up in the morning, you know, like kind of a pit in my stomach feeling that like, oh, I have to go here now. Yeah. Can't be bothered. I just don't want to be at this training ground. Yeah. Didn't get a good feel from the manager. Not sure he got me.
Do you know Dundee? Were they?
Dundee United,
Were they? President club as well at the time.
I don't know that.
Would that have been a difficult? Yeah. Would something, because you're an Irish lad from Cork, a Catholic?
Yeah.
Did that ever affect anything?
I don't think so. No. I wouldn't think so. No. They wore orange. That was about it. Oh, but I wouldn't think that.
You've never had any issues like that.
No, I didn't. I didn't really. I just I found it going from the echelon of the Premier League, where the glitz and glamour, you're standing in the tunnel. Next to Ronaldo's and the Gerrards and all this.
Yeah.
I'm going to Dundee United here. They didn't have their own training ground. You know, little things were kind of annoying me. Like, you know, and I just felt I made a mistake. And I think I was struggling more with that than anything else. Yeah. More, it was more my issue than anything else. I think I was kind of using everything else as an excuse. But yeah, geez, I was going to, like, I love my training. I love training, I love games, I love competing. Mm. But it was getting to the point where I was getting out of bed, just going to training, barely talking to anybody. Training done, shower, home, as quick as I could.
Yeah.
And just repeat. And
that's not.
I could not wait till the next transfer, and I wanted to get out of there so badly, so badly.
And how did you play while you were there? Were you
terrible. No, I played poor. I played poor. Really, I scored a goal or two or something. Got sent off up there again. sometimes you're trying too hard. Then I was kind of saying, like, I get into spaces for a few weeks where I'm going to, this is it, and I'm going to just be a professional. Get your head in the game kind of thing, like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Then I try too hard and I get sent off, or, you know, just silly things. Or I'd fall out with the manager. I fell out with the manager a couple of times just because he'd asked your opinion on something, and I give him an opinion, not in a nasty or sneaky way, but it was almost as he thought I was testing his authority.
Mm.
Well, don't ask me the question then, you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. You know, don't ask me the question if you don't want an answer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I felt the lads then kind of felt like, because me and the manager weren't getting on, they kind of had to kind of take a wide berth. So,
yeah.
I don't know. It was all me more than anything.
Did you really go back to Sunderland afterwards?
Oh yeah, I got recalled by Sunderland because I wanted to. I asked to be called back. I couldn't be there anymore. Can I come back? Yeah, you can come back. No problem. Come down, train, get yourself right, and we'll take it from there.
Yeah, yeah.
And even in that, I'd organised all my agent and with the club to go back. The manager of Dundee United calls a meeting with me. To say, oh yeah, we decided we're going to send you back down to, all till the end. Like, it was all about power. He wanted control. I was like, no.
Unnecessary.
Whatever, like, you know what I mean? I just, you know, I said, but I'm looking back now, and I know tough love and all that was different environment. It's amazing, a support system that you need in all walks of life. And sport is no different. If you don't have it, as I said, I have my family, but within the football environment at that time, I just felt I was out on my own, fighting my own battle and going through a mental thing at that time where I'd never been through before.
Mm.
Even when I got released from Coventry, I always had this thing, I cried for 5 minutes about it.
Yeah.
I got upset about it, but ultimately I can walk, I can play football, I can,
there's
100 other clubs, so I can probably find my way back, you know? And I did, but now I'm here, I'm gone from playing the Premier League against Chelsea, Liverpool, Man United, to couldn't get myself going to play in the SPL.
Yeah.
And that was on me and my mental game. So, again, you know.
Did you end up at Northampton after?
No, so from there I went. I had a nomadic period of next 18 months. I went back to Sunderland. Roy had kind of got the sack around the same time I was wanting to come back. So, new manager come in, Steve Bruce, didn't really want anything to do with me. So, I went on loan to Blackpool. They needed a right winger.
Mm.
I said, listen, if you need a goalkeeper, I just want to play football.
Yeah.
Went to Blackpool. They were in the Championship at the time. Started playing some really good football. The weight of Dundee and all that was off.
Wearing orange again,
unfortunately. Didn't suit my complexion either. but went to Blackpool and it was going well. And then, I got appendicitis halfway through the loan spell. So just when I was kind of starting to kind of get motoring again, I kind of got knocked back down. And so there was a few teams. But the next year I went on loan to Hartlepool anyway, long story short. I went on loan to Hartlepool at the time. Joe Gamble, Dennis Bean, Liam McSweeney, three guys that were at Cork City with me were there in League One. They were struggling. I went there on loan, scored a bag of goals as a striker, comfortable, had a support network in football and out of football. Great. And that kind of, I went back then. I played for, went to Coventry, who I'd been as a U-team player, went back there as a first-team player now. Mm.
Jesus, that's...
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, you know, exactly. So when the opportunity to go back there came up, I could have stayed at Hartlepool. There was a couple of other teams in that division, League One at the time. I kind of said, I kind of have to take this. I have to, you know, full circle kind of thing. And Eddie Boothroyd took me there. I kind of liked Eddie. He was a good speaker.
Yeah.
Could buy into what he said. He made you feel $1 million. You know, he was a good man manager, good speaker.
Mm.
And I went there. I got injured early on in pre-season. I came off the bench a couple of times. We were flying. So he didn't change the team much, which is fine. I wasn't going to argue with that. We were top of the league kind of come Christmas time. Brilliant. Great buzz. February time, we lost about 7 or 8 games in a row. 80 lost his job. So the guy that liked me brought me in.
Mm.
Has lost his job, so I'm back to kind of thinking,
who's coming in here?
Yeah. So Coventry was it was a unfortunate time really. I played some games there. Probably didn't get the chance. I'd run a games I would have liked, but AD then brought me to Northampton.
Yeah.
So again, the manager that brought me to Coventry, he went to Northampton, and he brought me there with him, and that was good times.
You got promotion.
We got to the playoff final.
What was it like in Wembley?
Yeah, it was not great to lose at Wembley, I tell you that much. Yeah. Yeah, and it was fantastic. It was good as well. Good club. Felt very like Cork City in a way.
Yeah.
I'm only back from there myself. Last week.
It's a nice place as well.
It's grand. Yeah. On my mother's side of the family. A good few of them anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually a big place.
Yeah.
It's not a small place.
Is that a racing town as well?
It's a town, but it's actually bigger than Cork.
Oh, really?
Isn't it? It's a big place.
Probably,
it's a nice spot. I enjoyed it over there. I was over there for a break. Just seeing the family and stuff, but I could see they are a big. Were they a competitive club?
Mm. They were, and they were putting money into doing up their stadium. Yeah. And at the time, Clark Carlisle would have been the skipper, who had played in the Premiership under 80 at Watford. We had the Beast, Akin Fenwa, who you'd know from Soccer AM and all that. He was up front with me.
Draw Clark Carlisle.
Yeah,
is that the guy that had difficulties?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So he had a few mental issues himself, and he tried to commit suicide a couple of times.
He survived. He went out in front of a truck, or he went off.
He threw himself off a bridge in front of a truck.
Yeah.
I think that.
But he goes and gives talks now about well-being.
He's a powerful guy. I mean, I played with him, and I never. Again, you never do. Can never tell, but always the most chipper, loud, friendly guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Never would have thought he struggled with anything, you know. But you don't know what happens when they go home. You don't know.
It's a facade as well.
You know, it probably and. But it's good that he did survive and he's able to give these talks and you know, give people some strength,
like,
because
not crying out for help if you're jumping off a bridge in front of a truck.
You just want it over, don't you?
That's game over. Mm-hmm. And to survive something like that and to be able to go away and do talks and help people. There's no one with better experience to be able to give these talks than someone that was actually at that stage of their life where they wanted to end it.
Well, remember Brian Lenehan here as well.
That's right, yes.
He was at Hull, and a lot of like what George talking about there, he experienced that as well. Like, he'd bad injuries, but change in management can have a huge effect on your career as well, you know. And then one manager buys into you, he gets sacked, the next manager don't fancy at all.
Yes.
And then, like, you have injuries on top of that, and then a recurring injury. You can see how your mental health would go. You think everything is against you, you know?
And it's as simple as that. And if you're not strong to who you are as a person, you can start getting very paranoid about who you talk to. You can start getting very kind of protective of your spot in the club. And, you know, it's a strange thing. And it's a strange culture as well as in England, you know. They talk about coaching and tactics, and you watch Sky Sports and you see all the moving to Subutio men around the table and all. But then Nottingham Forest, you're talking about going back to the basics of football, team spirit, winning games, having fun with your mates, togetherness. Nottingham Forest got promoted to the Premiership last year. July transfer window.
25 players or something.
Yeah.
How many?
25 something players.
They signed.
Right.
Completely new squad.
What?
So, you know, that's how's that for? What about all these guys that got them promoted? I get you're going to have to sign. They know that. You're going to have to sign players to compete. That's your culture completely gone, isn't it? Everything you've just built up there, you're wiping it out onto the next. I just don't get that.
Throw the bank at the likes of Jesse Lingard, who's a mercenary, and, you know.
Well, I don't know. I don't know him, but obviously they paid the highest bankroll there.
You made a great point there, Roy, as well, about the team, about the team spirit. And for me, I think that's one of the most important factors.
Mm-hmm.
If you've 12, 11 lads going out on the pitch, they're willing to fucking die for each other and play with each other, and they all get on.
Yeah.
Do you know
what's a good example of that at the moment? Man United with Ronaldo and Pogba and these guys, they were individuals.
Yeah.
But you know, they have the likes of Lisandro Martinez and Casemiro and, you know, fellas like that. They're, even when the defenders, when they tackled, they're all over hugging each other and they're, you know, bumping each other. Yeah. That's what you want. The togetherness is important.
Yeah, it's very important in any team. And the higher you go up, because of the ego, because of the money, because of the superstardom that they get now, it's probably very hard for managers to kind of keep that. But I think, you're right. I think with Man United at the moment, they've got rid of kind of that glitz and glamour and distraction.
Yeah.
And they're all certainly buying into it. Likes of Rashford and that are shining at the moment, aren't they?
He's doing well. Who's banging in goals? Well,
Casemiro is another level, but that's another podcast. Growing up in my house, we were all Pats fans because my dad is from Dublin, from Inchicore. So I remember years ago he was a mascot for Pats, and Pat Dolan was the manager at the time. Yeah. I remember being in the dressing room, you know, as the mascot. He used to give out fuck to the players. Very vocal, wasn't he? And there would have been Paul Ozam and Eddie Gormley, Trevor Molloy. They had a good team. They were the league champions and stuff as well. But the last time Pats won the league, the top goal scorer was Anto Flood. And at the end of the season, Anto Flood emigrated to Australia to play, because the reality for a lot of League of Ireland fellas is at the end of the season, you're signing on the dole. A lot of them, you know. Mm-hmm. You're not like full-time 12-month contract over a period of years. But you ended up going to Australia too. What was it like going to Australia? What kind of was the standard? Did it surprise you? Or?
Yeah, it did. I always, going back to Cork, when we used to go on these European trips, I always had this kind of wanderlust of thinking, I'd like to play abroad, like not just England. I always had this in my thing. You know, we're over in Czech Republic or Sweden, wherever we are. It's like, it's a bit different. I like it, you know. So in the back of my head, when I was in England, I had the kind of this thing I wanted to play in America or Australia. I'd like to give the MLS a chance or the A-League. I used to watch a bit of it on Sky Sports at the time.
Did you stay in England for how long?
So after AD got the sack, we got to the playoff final. And within 3 months of the next season, I had a few injuries. I had a couple of operations. And AD had been sacked by the time I came back. And I just said, you know what? I need a change here. George O'Callaghan, who was becoming a super agent at the time, he said, would you like to go and play for the Sultan of Brunei's team as their marquee player? And I goes, no.
But sounds lucrative.
No, and I put the phone down, exactly, yeah. But he kept ringing anyway. And eventually I kind of goes, you know what? I'll give it a go. This was February. Obviously the season runs in England, August to May.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, right, I had these operations, I've been injured. Why don't I just go February to October, go over do their season, their summer season, come back flying in England next year. I went over to Brunei, which was offbeat, go over play there, middle of Malaysia, middle of Borneo. And went over.
Wealthy.
So the house, car, money, taxes paid, all that kind of carry on. But the opportunity for me to go and just play football and enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I did. I went for the 9 months, scored a load of goals, got myself super fit, bit of sunshine as well. I was glowing. So went and I enjoyed it, loved it, and I opened my eyes. I was thinking, I'm not going back to England here. George was trying to then say, hey, go back to England, you're 28, go back. This, you're flying out.
Yeah.
I can open a few doors here with your form. I was like, you know what, I'm not interested. And anyway, long story short, after a few months, anyway, I ended up going to the A-League in Australia. And it was a chance as well, going there with my wife. It was a chance to kind of settle down, you know, properly, you know, make family, make a home. And that's how it worked out. No, I self-destructed once or twice along the way as well within that, and tried to ruin it for everybody. But went to Australia. The standard over there, football, really good. It's tough to play in the sun. But they play in big stadiums. They've got TV deals. Every game is on the TV.
What kind of a capacity? Is it a big following?
Yeah, well, when I went there, it was full stadiums everywhere.
Go where?
Yeah.
What's that? What's a full stadium?
So we used to go and play against Melbourne Victory, would have won the big clubs. They would get 25,000 at their games. Yeah, we would play Wanderers, Western Sydney Wanderers, I should say. They would get 20,000 at their stadium. I was playing for Mariners, Central Coast Mariners. We were down the league at the time, but we'd get average about 15,000 when I went to 2015.
That's a lot, like.
But in between that, there's been a few, there's been problems with the Football Association and fans. They kind of change of TV deal as well. There's been a few issues. And fans have kind of felt a bit distanced from the powers that be. But anyway, the fans have kind of come back after COVID as well a little bit. Obviously, I commentate more on the football now than I do play in the A-League. But
Are you still playing?
I'm playing for Sydney Olympic, who are a Greek club that play what would be the like equivalent to the championship now in Australia. So I played for 6-7 seasons in the A-League.
Have you got a good work-life balance over in Australia?
That's what I found. I kind of, I'm happy, I'm comfortable. I can go and be serious about my football, you know, and be honest when I'm playing my football, but can also go away and I don't have to kind of worry about bad weather. I can get the kids out in the sun. I can kind of enjoy my life as well, and still have the challenge of what is a good league. And I know people are, you know, people are elitist, you know, to be all end all is English football. Be in England, play in England. England's where it's not. There's so many great leagues around the world. There's so much talent out there. I would say to young kids, you know, have a look around. Have a look what suits your style of football. If you're a technical player and you're not the biggest, maybe England's not for you. Can you get try and play in Holland, Belgium?
The European Cups are... there's the European Conference League now.
Yeah.
I was watching the... I'd watch anything now. Yeah, if there's a football involved, I'd watch it. I don't care what league it is. But I was watching this, the highlights of that. And I was there... Graham Carey plays for Steaua Bucharest, for in the Conference League. But he had a lot of years at Plymouth Argyle. He had a great left leg. Or he's a fellow in the middle of Europe by doing his thing. But yeah. Great experience. Yeah. He's still playing in Europe, still playing at a good level. He's
right too. And I think he came through at Celtic. He went to Plymouth.
Yeah.
Great from set piece. He might have played a...
Back up to Scotland.
He might have played in Bowes for years. So I think I might be right there. But he's right though. He's playing for a big club over there. Yeah. He's done well.
But you know... At the moment, a championship player or a first division player in England could go to the likes of China or maybe to Qatar and get the equivalent of what top premiership players are getting.
Sadly. Mega money,
They're getting serious money.
Yeah.
Like, look at Ronaldo at the moment and how much he's getting. Imagine how much the players on that team that he's playing with.
But them leagues are only going to grow. The Saudi leagues, the Qatar leagues, the UAE leagues, right?
Well, the spotlight now is on that league because of Ronaldo.
Yeah. And I've started to notice that there's stuff coming up on my phone now. Oh, this team is playing. I never heard of this team in my life. Ronaldo's playing.
That's it. Sponsors now coming in, and all of a sudden it's all over the place, you know?
Yeah. What's post career? What's the plan?
So at the moment I'm transitioning, as they would say. So I'm, as I said, I'm playing the equivalent of the championship for Sydney Olympic.
Yeah.
I was saying to Timmy earlier, promotion relegation is coming in, which hasn't been. So there will be a chance for them to go up next year, I would think. But I'm playing, I'm assistant manager from this season on as well, but I work for Paramount Plus and Network 10, so I do like the punditry and commentary and stuff like that. So
are you going to get into management? Is that the goal?
Yeah, I don't know. I've just finished my UEFA license actually with the FAI, just to have it, kind of have your PhD in football, open. I've learnt it all on the pitch.
Yeah.
I might just try and pass on a bit of knowledge.
Exactly.
You do a bit of commentary as well.
A bit of punditry so far. Yeah.
You can notice that because of the way you speak. Speak very well.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And you've had experience, and you can see it, can't you, James? Yeah, so fair play. There could be.
That's it. I enjoy that. I enjoy being able to speak on football, man. As you said, I'd watch football anywhere.
Yeah.
I know about it. I like speaking about it. And the A-League, I played in it for 6-7 years. Scored loads of goals. I think people respect my opinion on it as well. So that helps. So I like that. I like a bit of the coaching. I suppose I'll find out if I get the graw for that as it goes on, because I'm still in player mindset. I'm still going to be a player. I'm the assistant manager, but I'll kind of be more like a captain thing. You know what I mean? Because I still want to be one of the lads.
You still want the glory.
You know what I mean? I still want to score the goals. I'm closing that 200 career goal too, lads. So you know what I mean?
Are you closing on 200?
Yeah. So I'm at 170 odd. That's what I mean. We talked today about ups and downs, playing Premier League, playing for Cork City, being flat as a pancake up in Scotland and all these loans and injuries. But you know what, it's like life, ups and downs, and you just have to kind of sometimes.
Any advice for a would-be footballer starting out, or maybe somebody that's just had to come back from England, or somebody that's after being through an injury and they're feeling like it's not going to happen from?
I suppose the best advice my mum ever gave me was, you can only do your best. You can only do your best. And the best advice, I suppose, my dad ever gave me was, get knocked down 9 times, stand up 10. That's as simple as that. And that just
any walk of life, that's good advice.
Exactly. You know, things get tough. You're going to go through tough times. But, you know,
make sure you have the right people around you.
Exactly. You know.
Make sure you have the right people around you to give you the best advice possible. And do, and as your mother and father says, we all get knocked down, we get back up. Living out there.
I've three quick fire questions to finish.
Yeah.
So don't think about it now.
Right, so.
Highlight of your career.
Playing the Premier League.
Best player you played with?
Oh, it's a good one. Let me think. I suppose a couple on paper, yeah. Andy Cole and Dwight York.
Yeah, not bad.
they probably weren't at their peak at that time, though. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
They still had it, though.
But they still had that class and quality. Yeah, absolutely.
They're reading the game and stuff.
Absolutely. And I learned a lot. They were strikers in the squad and the whole play, their clever movements, you know.
Best player you played against?
I suppose on their day, at that time, Gerrard and Torres for Liverpool together. In tandem, they were brilliant.
They had a thing together, didn't
they? And I was lucky I got to play against Chelsea and Man United and Liverpool. And United had the Ronaldos and the Roonies and Scholes and all that. But I think for performance on the day, the two lads, like, just... Yeah.
Unreal.
Gerrard always looked for him when he had the ball.
Unbelievable.
Torres was the best striker in the world at the time.
It actually reminds me, look
who was feeding him balls. Like.
Yeah. It reminds me of De Bruyne and Haaland, no? Yeah. De Bruyne is unbelievable for just your striker's dream, like, you know what I mean? Just putting balls, just get there.
Even his movement off the ball, De Bruyne, he's always moving into
always
space.
Always involved. He's brilliant, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Been a pleasure, right?
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for your time. And how you thought all the people in Australia that listen to the podcast as well.
Good work, boys. Thank you.
Right. Please God, we'll come to Australia sometime, Tim.
Most definitely. Why not?
And Happy New Year to everybody.
God bless.
See you later.
Bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.